Welcome back to Culture Shift Live here on 101.9 WDET. So good to have you here on this Thursday afternoon. It is a gorgeous afternoon, as you just heard from our own Quinn Kleinfelter. Sunny skies throughout the afternoon, possibly some showers later, but right now, sunny, beautiful, about 80 degrees here in the city of Detroit. Coming up this hour on the show, we've got a fabulous dance party ahead for you, getting into some foundational records of Dream Pop and Shoegaze. Going to do some music from A.R. Kane. Also dig into a new wave gem from the New York band Polyrock. That is coming up around 1:40. Kicking off this hour, as we've been doing for the last few Thursdays here on the show, we've introduced a brand new segment, covering the world of gaming. The gaming industry in the U.S. and across the globe has become a multi-trillion dollar industry. For millions of people, gaming has become more than a pastime. It is a vital connection and community for millions. The size and scope of the gaming world has also brought a whole host of issues. Labor, economic, cultural, and political challenges have rocked the industry in recent years. In light of all that, we've introduced a new weekly segment here on Culture Shift to cover the many facets of the industry. And for that, we have turned to our own in-house gaming journalist, Nate Bender. Nate is the host of the podcast Let's Play, a daily gaming news podcast, and the creator of Checkpoint Radio, the first syndicated radio show for esports. He's a colleague here at WDET. He is an audio engineer, and he is here on Culture Shift Live. Hey, welcome, Nate.
Hey, thank you for having me once again. And we're going to get into all of those areas, labor, cultural, politics, all here today on the little segment, which I think we have a name suggestion for, which I kind of like.
Maybe we should open it up, too, and maybe do a Twitter poll as well.
Yeah. I would love that. I would love to get some more name suggestions. We've got a really clever one in the bank, but if you think you can come up with a better one,
hey, yeah,
tweet us.
I like this challenge, Nate.
I love it. I love it. So let's start.
We didn't even tell them what this it was.
I didn't want to give the game away, but Nate's one up date is I think what we were
one up, as when you get an extra life in
Correct.
Old school games.
Correct.
Nate's one up date. So we're gonna put a Twitter poll out there later this afternoon at DET Culture Shift. You can find us if you have a better one. If you think you can top that, let us know.
Yeah,
us
I love know. It. So last week we talked a little bit about Riot Games and their history with the 2018 class action lawsuit. Well, they just put out their 2021 diversity and inclusion report, and there were some very interesting statistics here. Now, I have to say that Riot has been very fastidious about trying to tackle this problem, and they've come up with a lot of different ways. There are some rioter inclusion groups that basically break down their staff into any multitude of different diversity groups. And so let's actually take a look at some of the statistics in the 2021 Diversity and Inclusion Report, because women in leadership positions between for 2020, it was 29%. And in 2021, it actually went down to 21.7%. Also, underrepresented minorities in leadership positions from 2020 went from 22% down to 17.3%.
Nate, do we think this has anything to do, because it's 2020 to 2021, so the pandemic clearly had to have a impact on
sure.
women in the workplace.
Sure. And I think that that's probably a pretty good inclination. But what Riot had said about this mm-hmm. is that they actually expanded the definition of what qualifies a leader at Riot Games. So you have a larger pool that you're sampling. And so that would actually account for some of the big data discrepancies between those 2 years, which is, I think, overall a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into some new hire statistics, because women in 2021 made up 28% of the new hires at Riot Games, in 2021 making up 30.4% of the new hires. So some really good improvements there. And underrepresented minorities in 2020 were at 14%. 2021, we're seeing an expansion up to 17.3%. And Riot also noted that Riot is really proud to be able to report that their efforts in this area are working, that there are no statistically significant differences in pay for women and underrepresented minorities at Riot. And I think that that is something that should be applauded and a goal that they had set out. And when they set out to do it, a lot of people said, hey, it can't be done. And I think Riot has made some really, really good headway in this area. And so I wanted to shine a spotlight on that.
I have I don't know if this is a question exactly, but you know, it seems like they're doing some really, really good documenting.
Yes.
Of all of this. And has there been a maybe industry-wide maybe sort of survey to see as over the years as women and underrepresented minorities have increased in the workforce in these gaming companies, has representation in the games themselves increased?
The simple answer is no, because unless there is a real motivating factor like a class action lawsuit that came against Riot in 2018, transparency is not really at the forefront of the video game industry in terms of their hiring practices. So, you know, a lot of this stuff kind of happens in the dark. And this is what has really kind of lit a fire under the unionization effort at a lot of these huge game developers, which actually moves us into our next story. Activision Blizzard, I should say, is continuing in labor busting behavior, union busting behavior in the case of Blizzard Albany. This is the quality assurance team that has come together to form a union under Blizzard Albany. They argued that it should not be up to the 20-25 person QA team, and it should be up to the entire staff. Never mind the fact that unions are voluntary to join, so it's not like a unionization effort is going to automatically make sure that everyone forcibly joins the union, but it just gives people the option. And the reason that these things, that these efforts start at the QA level is because that's the lowest rung on the totem pole. QA stands for quality assurance, and these are the people that are testing games as they're coming off of beta and alpha runs to try to find bugs and to make sure that games are the least buggy experience once they actually reach the public.
And we talked about a few weeks ago on the segment, that is a difficult job, especially when there is a deadline coming up. These folks are working 15 hours a day, sleeping under their desks. Working conditions are just very, very difficult in some of these places.
And it seems that Blizzard really tried a new tactic this week beyond saying, well, it's only a small fraction of the workforce that actually wants a union. They've now gone ahead and doxed some of their own employees. As a part of the hearings, they made the names, the LinkedIn profiles, the social media profiles of all 20 people who are looking to unionize publicly available, which when we start talking about harassment today, I want you to keep that in mind, because that is a very, very serious security oversight by Activision Blizzard, and it actually puts these people in real tangible danger.
Just for one moment, explain what doxing is to people who may not understand that term.
Absolutely. So doxing is when someone will find your address and your personal information and leak that online to a group of people who, I don't know, maybe they have an axe to grind. Maybe they don't like some of the political things that you say, either on your social media or on your Twitch stream. Public figures are subject to this. Journalists are subject to this. And it's really a kind of high caliber harassment technique that people deploy to intimidate people from being vocal about things. So very interesting choice there from Blizzard. And there was a great quote from one anonymous Blizzard Albany employee saying, quote, given how toxic a lot of fandoms and gamers can be, it's pretty upsetting to see everyone's names publicized when it really didn't have to be like this. And that's really sort of the the point there. Also, the lawyer for Blizzard, Activision Blizzard, tried to get some protesters removed from the NLRB hearing that was happening over Zoom, where they had images like ABK Stop Union Busting, and they changed their names. Fortunately, the NLRB officer, the hearing officer, Ruth Passantes, refused to remove these folks from the hearing and treated them like any other activist at an NLRB hearing. So we're going to see hopefully what ends up coming out of this NLRB meeting. And hopefully we will add yet another tally to the list of gaming unions in North America. And I wanted to end our news segment here, the news portion of the segment, following up on the Keffel swatting incident that we talked about last week. The notable trans streamer and activist Keffels in London, Ontario, Canada, was swatted. A SWAT team was sent to her house. She was woken up with guns pointed in her face. Her property was confiscated. I can report that fortunately all her personal property has been returned to her by London, Ontario police, and they are still treating this as an ongoing investigation. She has since removed herself from her premises and went to a hotel, and unfortunately her hotel got doxxed.
Oh, so my goodness.
Pizzas were being sent to her room under her birth name, clearly a harassment attempt. And when asked how it would have been possible that, you know, internet trolls got Keffels' location, she seems to think that they cross-referenced the bedsheets in a picture of her cat that she posted on social media until they found the right hotel.
It's so disturbing on so many different levels, but also really disturbing. I don't know if there is a sort of maybe mental condition at this point for people who would be so obsessed that they would spend that amount of time
in detective work.
In detective work to harass someone.
Yeah,
like this.
You really have to kind of wonder what's going on in the mind of someone who has this kind of time and this kind of effort to put into something
and
like this.
And they've become powerful now because they're truly affecting and impacting everything in this woman's life.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I wanted to follow up. Last week saw some other popular streamers being swatted, including Aiden Ross, iShowSpeed, and there was a frankly bizarre incident that occurred with a streamer, a Call of Duty streamer, Nadia, who was being accused of cheating in Call of Duty. And it led to this absolutely baffling moment.
Can you at least throw some emotes in the chat for the following? At least a little something, some hype in the chat. Let's go, guys.
Can you stream?
Yeah, we'll talk about that offline.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we'll talk about that offline. You guys have a great time. Have a great day. We're going to talk to her about some crazy stuff. You guys have a great time. We'll talk to y'all in a little bit. She needs 5 more subs to hit that goal. Somebody give her those 5 subs. Come on now. Let's get that hype train going. Let's go.
Oh
come
God.
On, guys. Get that hype train before she gets off for a second.
Oh, my God.
So I want to point out that is a responding police officer that's sitting down with Nadia and talking directly to her stream about being swatted. Wow. That is a complete 180 from Keffel's experience, who was woken up at the barrel of a gun. And it shows sort of the range of different responses that happen. And, you know, I have to wonder if there was an anti-swatting list in play, you know, for Nadia's incident, because obviously there is a complete discrepancy from the way that the London, Ontario police handled it to wherever Nadia is, to the way that her local police precinct handled it. And, you know, for as kind of funny as that clip is, there is a real danger in each of these swatting incidents that can lead to loss of life, and that should not absolutely be underplayed in any way whatsoever.
Oh, absolutely. And I can imagine that a lot of the folks who are victims of the swatting technique are minorities, are women, are people that are often often face a lot of police violence.
Absolutely.
At least the threat of it. Again, we're talking to Nate Bender. He is a gaming journalist and an employee here at WDET on our weekly gaming segment, talking about the news you need to know here in the gaming world that has happened. Tia Graham joining us as well. I'm Amanda LeClaire. Now, Nate, we're getting into the meat of the segment this time. This might be a multi-week segment because there is so much to get into.
There is.
I think I would venture a guess that most people, even if they don't follow the gaming world whatsoever, have heard of Gamergate.
Yes, Gamergate was a incident, some people call it a movement, but it was a loosely organized misogynistic online harassment campaign. And to give you a little bit of background on this, it initially started by targeting game developer Zoe Quinn. This was back in 2014. I actually was working here at WDET at the time. And this movement started under the guise of promoting ethics in games journalism. The story, the narrative of what happened was that it was purported by a number of different places, 4chan, 2chan, Reddit, that this game developer, Zoe Quinn, was having an inappropriate relationship with game journalist Nathan Grayson, who had reviewed her game positively. There has been various amounts of evidence on either side of this. But the point is that this was a independent game developer who got a little bit of press on Kotaku. And for some reason, the internet lost its mind. The Gamergate harassment campaign continued to harass others through 2015, including feminist media critic Anita Sarkeesian and independent game developer Brianna Wu. A lot of people were wondering at the time, where is this coming from? What is motivating all of this? And there was a very telling conversation in 2015 that Trump strategist Steve Bannon had, who was talking about, Breitbart through 2015 and the alt-right journalist Milo
Yiannopoulos,
Thank you. I've always struggled with his last name. But Breitbart had used the Gamergate campaign to create an army of men's rights activists to push anti-politically correct rhetoric, misogyny, and violence from the fringes into mainstream politics. So if you've ever wondered how we got to the discourse that we got to once 2016 came around, mm-hmm. and the Trump campaign became mainstream, much of this was astroturfed through the gaming industry, wow. by Steve Bannon and Breitbart. And the sad part is that there were a lot of my friends at the time who were very susceptible to messaging like this, yeah. because it comes wrapped in this gift box of ethics of, yeah. doing something, we want something to improve out of this. And I don't dispute that games journalism has had a very uncomfortable relationship with game developers for a very long time. So what they did was they wrapped a movement of misogyny, violence, and hatred in the guise of something that had a lot of legitimacy and co-opted that all the way to the mainstream of the body politic today. And it's really remarkable to have watched this spin up in 2014 and try to raise the alarms and have people look at me like I was crazy.
Yeah, and I want to say this is something that we want to get into over the next few weeks, because this goes into not only Gamergate, but recruitment by white nationalists is happening in the gaming world on these online streaming platforms. And Nate's going to be bringing us those stories over the next few weeks.
Absolutely.
But when we were talking about this, this blew my mind, but I am a little bit familiar with not just Steve Bannon, but Steve Bannon is a very educated propagandist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He knows exactly what he's doing. And these plans, these tentacles of propaganda and hate have been being sent out for years now.
Absolutely. And he has a long history in the gaming world, because before he was active in the political space, he was a part of one of these companies that will sit on an online game and farm up currency and then sell it for real money to players who don't have that kind of time. And so he has, you know, he has spent a lot of time inside of the gaming community, understanding what makes it tick, and perfectly executed all of those things when Gamergate became a quote unquote movement. But I also wanted to talk about some harassment and defamation statistics coming out of the ADL, because I want people to understand how common this truly is. 5 out of 6 adults, that's 83% between 18 and 45, have experienced some sort of harassment in online games. That represents 80 million adult gamers.
Personally, for you, Nate, have you experienced this?
Absolutely.
And how often are you experiencing this harassment online?
Absolutely. Well, I'm a bit of a different case because I'm a gaming journalist, outspoken on many issues in the gaming industry, and have run a popular gaming podcast for years. So I have a target painted on my back.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've received death threats.
Oh my
I've
gosh.
Received Google Maps positions of where I live.
What?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this, you know, this is a very, very dedicated and very serious group of individuals who want to try to menace as many people as possible. I've never seen anyone even remotely try to act on any of those threats, but I have received more than a few.
And how do you deal with that? How do you handle that? I mean, you're continuing to do your work. You do great work. How do you handle that? How do you go day in and day out with that?
It's kind of what comes along with the territory. I think, you know, anyone who was getting involved in games journalism around, you know, 2013, 2014, 2015, which is when I really started to concentrate on my career in that area, understood that this was something that came with the territory. And it's not just, you know, political opinions or anything like that, but developers experience a high degree of harassment from players who play their game and claim to love their game. This is I wanted to point out the 83% statistic because that is an overwhelming majority. And I know that there are probably some gamers that listen to this segment that disagree with some of the things that I say, but that is an absolutely unacceptable statistic. And it really kind of paints the picture of the way that we treat each other and the way that we interact with each other. I am a big fan of trash talk. I love trash talk, and video games are inherently competitive. Mm-hmm. But there is a very, very big difference between harassment and trash talk. To continue on with a few other statistics here, 3 out of 5 teenagers, that's 60% of teenagers, experienced some sort of harassment in online games. 8% of adults and 10% of teenagers say that they've been exposed to discussion in online games that pertain to white supremacist ideology. That's also a shockingly high statistic, and also something that I've run into just in playing video games myself. And it's very concerning, because there are so many people that are trying to co-opt young people's attention. Mm-hmm. Andrew Tate is a great example.
Don't even bring him up.
But this is a great way. Andrew Tate is awful, but he's a great example of the way that someone really tries to aggressively co-opt youth culture and try to work their way into the minds of young men and women. And it's incredibly disturbing the way that these trends continue and how they're facilitated through major media, exposure through other streamers.
And for those who don't know, because I am actually blessed to have not known about Andrew Tate, because I don't run in these circles,
so
but
bad.
He is a former kickboxing
yes.
champion, and now I apparently moved to Romania because it's easier to get away with sexual assault there.
He's disgusting.
He is a misogynist, horrific misogynist.
Horrific misogynist.
And has a lot of fans, and unfortunately.
And unfortunately, that is the centerpiece of his entire brand, is the misogyny that he spews. And it's really unfortunate because there are so many young men who are, you know, taken in by confidence. Maybe they don't have a confident male role model in their life, and they see that and then they start to parrot it. And it makes me really worried for, you know, younger men in my family. And
yes,
a lot in the same way that Andrew Tate has come along and really co-opted the popularity of a lot of Twitch streamers and a lot of online shows, that the exact same thing happened along Gamergate, where it came in and co-opted so much of the energy that existed naturally in the gaming community and used it for their own purposes and to their own ends. And I think we see the consequence of a lot of that right now. There are a lot more statistics in here, but a few more that I wanted to mention. 71% of adults experienced severe physical abuse, including physical threats, stalking, and sustained harassment.
71.
And I think with my death threats, I fall into that category as well. 49% of adult women reported identity-based harassment. I'm surprised that's not way higher. 38% of LGBTQIA plus players reported identity-based harassment. 42% of African Americans reporting identity-based harassment, and 38% of Asian Americans reporting identity-based harassment. These are just horrific numbers. And the real thing that I think the real takeaway that people should take from this is that the game companies that facilitate these discussions, that bring the technology to the table, that allow these people to connect with one another, are doing absolutely nothing to try to combat the extremism that is now popping up in the gaming sphere, and doing absolutely nothing to try to moderate these sort of discussions. They leave it on the end user to say, well, mute someone if you don't like what they're saying. And I think that that is absolutely unconscionable. We've seen gamer-related discussion spaces like Discord really come down hard on moderating alt-right and white supremacist extreme views, but there has been absolutely nothing done in terms of technological facilitation to bring down or try to combat the number of harassment, the amount of white supremacist ideology, the amount of plain bad behavior from people on these platforms. And where there is no one paying attention, that's where this stuff really breeds. And I think it is contingent upon those gaming companies to act, and to act fast.
Nate, thank you so much. We are going to continue this conversation. There's a lot more to get into with Gamergate. And as we said, the not just politicization, but the recruitment by white nationalists happening in the gaming world over the next couple of weeks. Nate Bender, our in-house gaming journalist here at WDET. You can catch him on the daily gaming news podcast, Let's Play. And Nate, again, let's remind folks, we are looking for a name for the segment here.
That's right.
We're going to be putting out a Twitter poll later today. And right now, the top champion is Nate's One Update.
That's right. That's so far the name. And I like it. I think it's a really good name.
I love it.
But if you've got a better one, let us know.
And as well, really quickly, Nate, what are you playing? What's new? Yeah.
So I found out how to mod my handheld gaming PC called a Steam Deck.
Yeah.
So I have been replaying some old games in my bed and just having the greatest time. Steam Deck for the win.
All right.
Thank you so much, Nate Bender. I'm Amanda LeClaire here with Tia Graham. We will return after this with the Culture Shift Dance Party, getting into some classic dream pop, new wave for Throwback Thursday here on 101.9 WDET. This is Detroit's NPR station.
It's an adventurous mix of new music each and every week on Modern Music. Saturdays at 4 with me, John Mosier. Brand new artists, underground trailblazers, and the best of the local independent music scene. It's the most new music on Detroit radio, right here on 101.9 WDET.
President Biden signed a law giving more tax credits to people to buy electric cars. But some automakers worry that may cause new wrinkles in the supply chain. I'm Eli Newman, and that's coming up on All Things Considered today at 4, right here on 101.9 WDET.
I'm Laura Herberg, and in the latest episode of Curiosity, I try to figure out what happened to the swimming pools on wheels that Detroit used to have. A top park official tells me he saw one in storage in the early 2000s, but the city no longer has it.
I'm 99% sure of that.
99% sure? That means a 1% chance the swimming pool might be in storage.
I love your enthusiasm, but no.
Listen to Curiosity wherever podcasts are available.
WDET is supported by AEG Presents. Leon Bridges with Little Dragon, August 22nd at the Masonic Temple Theater. Tickets on sale now at AXS.com. Leon Bridges with Little Dragon, August 22nd at the Masonic Temple Theater.
Gorgeous Thursday afternoon here in Detroit. Do enjoy it over the next couple of days. We'll see highs in the mid-80s today and tomorrow with sunny skies. And then over the weekend, beautiful start to Saturday. Just so you can plan this out. Great start to Saturday. Sunny skies expected. We'll see a high on Saturday near about 87. And then thunderstorms rolling in Saturday afternoon and evening, expected to last most of the day on Sunday as well. So definitely a rainy weekend headed our way here in the city of Detroit. Right now, though, sunny skies, 84 here, 29 Celsius over in Windsor. It's time for the dance party.
I want to get up and do my thing.
Yeah.
I want to get into it.
Let's dance.
All right, in this edition of the dance party, got some gems coming up for you. We'll get to some new synth pop released in the last couple of years from an artist named Cindy. But we'll also start off here with an incredible artist. I think one of the most underappreciated artists on the label 4AD. Now, the Pixies were on 4AD, Cocteau Twins, This Mortal Coil, known for a lot of dream pop, shoegaze as well. And that artist is A.R. Kane. They are a British musical duo formed in 1986. They released their debut album here in 1988. Really laid the foundation for a lot of what we know today as dream pop, even shoegaze. A.R. Kane, from 1988, A Love from Outer Space, here on WDET. intelligent synth-pop artist known as Cindy. From 2020 album, I'm Cindy. That was the track 2 years, 6 months here on The Dance Party. Now let's get into some classic new wave from the band Polyrock from this album released in 1980. This track is called Romantic Me here on Culture Shift.
Oh,
The British band Medium, the track So Hungry, So Angry, released in 1981. It did end up charting in the U.S. on the Billboard Disco charts, hitting number 48 in 1981 there. Let's move ahead to a little bit of a, quite a bit of a newer act here from Sweden, Viagra Boys, the track is Sports.
Sports.
from 2018 from their album Streetworms. It's the Viagra Boys here on 101.9 WDET. Hope you enjoyed today's dance party. You can check out our playlists are over at WDET.org/culture shift. Check out the last few days of the show. By the way, we had a great one yesterday. Live callers calling in with songs about cruising. Some great stories, too, in honor of the Dream Cruise happening this weekend all along Woodward Avenue, North 8 Mile there. Check it out at WDET.org/culture shift.
WDET is supported by Founders Brewing Company, Detroit Tap Room, introducing All Day Chill Day, a cold IPA brewed with the subtle flavor of pineapple, floral, and lemon notes. On draft and in cans at the Detroit Tap Room. More at foundersbrewing.com.
WDET is supported by the Downtown Detroit Partnership, celebrating 100 years of serving Detroit with a garden party in Campus Martius Park, August 24th, starting at 5:30, with food, drinks, and a signature cocktail. Learn more at downtowndetroit.org.
WDET is supported by the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater, presenting saxophonist Kamasi Washington with special guest Detroit's own piano prodigy, Black Bach, together for one night only, Wednesday, August 31st. Tickets and information at thearetha.com.
This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station. The show is Culture Shift. I'm Amanda LeClaire. Thank you so much for joining us today. Tia Graham as well. We have a great show coming up tomorrow,
yes,
Tia.
Yes, the whole show, I believe the first... Honestly, the first and the second hour. First hour, we're going to have live callers. We're talking about dating in the post-Roe world. What does that look like for us? What does that look like for most people right now? Is it changing the way you date? Is it changing some of the things that you do? Then in the second hour, we're going to have a conversation about the role sports plays on the male body and how men view their own bodies. So we're going to have that conversation. We're going to discuss changing the way that we talk about male bodies versus compared to a sports figure body. So,
all right. Awesome conversations coming up tomorrow at noon live here on 101.9 WDET. The Moth Radio Hour is next. Thank you so much for joining us today on this edition of Culture Shift. We do appreciate it. Hope you have a great rest of your day and take care. We'll be back tomorrow.